Hey, good morning. Let's see. So we were in the middle last time of looking at convergence of functions. Actually, I guess we're just getting started because we'll be doing that for some time. But we had this list of examples that are up here now from last right at the end of last time. These eight different sequences of functions. I wanted to just finish where we were before, which was to try to analyze which of these converge in which way in which intervals. And as I said, these are good examples to keep in mind throughout the course. Okay, and then the otherwise today we will do more convergence. So I guess the other topic will be Cauchy sequences. So function convergence and Cauchiness. Which you, is a term you might remember from the first term, where you looked at Cauchy sequences for reals. And once again, that's the picture you should have in mind, is how this sort of limits for rational numbers or real numbers, and relate that to functions. Okay, so if we go now to to these examples that we had before. So we, if you recall, already run through one example. Which was this one here, x to the n. And if we graph an x to the n, it looks kind of like this. And what we'd worked out was that this pointwise, it approaches the function one at one, because it's one everywhere, and it approaches zero everywhere between minus one and one. Outside of that interval, it does not converge at all, right? So this is what we ended up with over here. And so that's what we have. It converges pointwise in this interval from minus one to one, open at this end, closed at that end. But uniformly, it has to be epsilon away from the two endpoints. Right, to converge uniformly, okay? And if we look at its derivative, that also is going to converge uniformly as long as we're epsilon away from the endpoints. Okay, so let's try the next one. So so the next one, we're looking at this function here, okay, which is a square root of x squared plus something small. And so if we were to graph it, it looks a lot like an absolute value, except it's got a little bit of it's differentiable at zero, and so it's got a little curve there at zero instead of a point. Okay, so let's see. So all right. So can anyone see if we look at whether it converges pointwise? Where does it converge pointwise to this function absolute value of x?
It looks to me like it should be everywhere.
That's the correct answer. Yes, it converges everywhere in R. It converges pointwise to the absolute value of x. That's correct. Okay, does everyone see that? So if we look at any particular point here, it's going to converge. What about uniformly? So if I look at the difference between this curve and the absolute value, is that bounded distance away?
I believe it should be, especially as closer to zero is where you would find the bound.
That's right. So this is the worst spot, and even that's going to zero. That's right, exactly. As you say, so it still converges uniformly even everywhere in R. And we noted that the supernorm is the same, so of course that's also true in the supernorm. So what about this C1 norm? If I look at the derivative, what's happening to the derivative of this function? So if I graph the derivative, it's going to be minus one, almost minus one, and then it's going to slew up to almost one, right? So what we wanted for C1, if you recall, was that it should converge uniformly, both the derivative and the original function, right? Because we had a sup norm for both of them. So we know the original function of converges uniformly, just did that. But what about this derivative? Is that converging uniformly to the derivative of the absolute value? See that? Yeah, someone has the right answer there in chat. It behaves very much like the example we just did does, right around one, right? So as long as we stay away from zero, then it's fine. But near zero, it's not converging uniformly. So to get this C1 convergence, it's only going to happen from minus infinity to minus epsilon and epsilon to infinity, but not right around zero, okay? So that's the, yeah, after, once we get away from zero, then it flattens out nicely and we have a uniform convergence of the derivative, but right around zero, it becomes vertical. Okay, very good. So that's some intuition. All right, so let's just try a few more. So, well, let's try the rest of them. So if we look at this one here, so remember the graph, this is shifting over to the right, okay? And so, and we want to compare it to this function one over x. All right, so does it converge pointwise? So if I, in other words, if I take any particular value of x here and then take a large enough n, am I getting a convergence toward that value one over x? Anyone see that one?
It looks like it, yes.
Uh-huh, yeah, it's fine, right? Of course, it's not defined at zero, but everywhere else it does exactly. You say, so it's r minus zero, which is, of course, the entire domain of one over x. That's the only place it could. All right, and then what about uniformly? So is that approaching uniformly?
I think so. It looks similar to the previous example, where our worst example was close to zero.
Okay, so actually this one's closer to the one before that. The problem is right here around zero, if I look at the difference between one over x and this shifted one, the vertical distance is large now. Right, okay, so so this one actually, unlike this one where the vertical distance is going to zero, here, if I get close enough, it's getting very large, okay? So this one is actually not uniform, okay? Did anyone see that? So this is only uniform if we avoid this neighborhood of zero. So again, it's gonna be like minus infinity to the minus epsilon and epsilon to infinity, but not right around zero. Okay, so that's where it's uniform. Okay, and then if we look at the derivative, it's behaves the same way. Okay. All right, so let's see, number four. So this one, actually there are two different limits that we want, that I might suggested looking at. So one is where this little box moves in towards zero, and the other is where the box becomes long and flat and moves out toward infinity. So it's n goes to infinity or n goes to minus infinity, right? So those two options. Okay, so so for n goes to infinity here, so let me see. All right, so we have the two different cases. All right, so let's see, so if, let me see which way did I do, so n is going to infinity, then I guess we're in this case here. Let me label it. Okay, so if we're getting these long flat boxes and they're moving out that way, are we approaching pointwise, uniformly, and in derivative? And again, the function we're trying to approximate is this function zero. Right. to if we take the n to be large enough, then the maximum distance here, remember that's the soup norm, that's going to zero, right? So the biggest thing we can get is zero. So this one does, so this is for all r. And it's actually happening uniformly. And also in C1 norm. Okay, what about if we're going to minus infinity though, so these boxes are getting tall and thin. So then are we approaching at any particular point X, are we approaching the right value so that it's pointwise convergent? So if I look at any particular point X, this box is going to sweep past it, and then it's going to stay zero for the rest of eternity. Okay. So it actually pointwise it does converge, but not uniformly. If we're near zero here, okay? Because if we look at the difference between those, it's large. And same for the derivative. Okay, let's see. So here are a couple more that are kind of interesting to think about. So if we look at the sine, so these are getting to be small. So their height is just 2 over n, and their width is 2 pi over n. So they look like small sine curves, okay? And the function we're trying to approximate is zero. All right, and so anyone see whether this converges in our three senses, pointwise, uniformly, and in C1 for all of R?
I don't think so.
Okay, so let's try looking at let's look at the three separately. Okay, let's start with, so the easiest one is pointwise. Okay, so let's start with pointwise and see if we look at a particular value here. What's our function approaching? Well, it's getting its height here is getting small, right? So it's so at any particular point, the maximum value is a 1 over n, okay? And so it's headed toward zero. So I claim that it is converging pointwise.
What about at zero?
At zero, that's a good question. So if we look at zero, so this, we're plugging in zero here. So it's actually just the constant function zero. For each n, we're gonna get zero here. So if we look at what these look like, we have the sine function here, and then we have sine of smaller, and then sine of smaller. So actually for each n, we're getting the value zero at zero.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was thinking 1 over x times sine.
Ah, sorry. No. Yeah. This one is just a normal looking sine. It's not.
Yeah, I see now. Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Gotcha.
Okay, good. All right. Okay, and then what about in the other two senses? Yeah, and so once again, yeah, this is not 1 over x. This is just x. Yeah, nx. Okay, let's finish this one, and then there's a question about 4. Then I'll go back and look at this question about 4. But let's finish off 5 first, and then go back to 4. So is this convergence uniform? So in other words, is there a maximum difference here that's going to zero?
I think so, yeah.
You're right.
It should be wherever the peak of the wave is.
That's right, and that's going to zero. So yeah, so as you say, so that's also true. But this one's a little trickier. If I look at the derivative, is the derivative approaching the same derivative as zero, well, which is zero, or do we have slopes that are staying large?
The slope should be going to zero as well, right? Because you'll still have a one over root n term outside.
Well, but if you take the derivative, we have that n there.
Oh yeah, never mind. So it'll just be cosine, yeah.
Yeah, so we'll end up with cosine of nx, which is someone also mentioned in the chat. And this one does not go to zero, right? That oscillates between one and minus one. So in other words, if I look here, I'm going to get the slope of one, and then it's going to be tiny, but I have another slope of one. However small it is, I'm still going to see the slopes of one and minus one, because the derivative is just the cosine of nx. So this is not converging in any interval. Okay, let's see. Actually, I promised to go back to four, but maybe I'll just finish six first, because it's so similar. So how do five and six differ? So the only difference is that I have a square root in here, right? Instead of an n. So when I take that derivative here, this n canceled that one over n, right? But this square root is not gonna cancel that. We'll be left with a square root over here, right? And also when you look at the picture, it's becoming broad and flat. Okay, so can anyone see how the convergence will be different between five and six here?
So this time, will we have convergence in the C1 norm?
Yes, that's the correct answer. So it's better. So these two still converge, and it also converges in C1. That's what's happening, because its slope is also converging. Okay, now there's a question about four. Let me go back to four. So why isn't it converging? Oh, why did I choose, you mean this? Oh, sorry, it's hard to read. I think that's the problem here. So. Yeah, so this is supposed to be a dot, not a minus. It's times. All right, so my interval is from one thing to twice. Did that answer your question? It's not supposed to be a minus. Okay, all right, and maybe I'll just mention how these last two work, because we're gonna come back and study these quite a bit, but it's one to try to think through. So if you recall the error term here, R, we had this was equal to e to the zeta here for some zeta times x to the n plus one over n plus one factorial. And for each x, this is getting small here. If you fix any particular x, this n plus one factorial is going to swamp that numerator. So we're going to end up with this one converging pointwise here. But it's not going to be. But for each for large x, you have to take a large n to kill it. Okay, so this is not going to converge uniformly, but it will converge uniformly if we go from minus n up to some number k, and the derivative is going to behave in exactly the same way. Actually, it is its own derivative, right? Okay, and then this last one, again, we'll come back and look at it, but you can think about it some, but what's going to happen is that this will converge between, and we saw this when we were doing our examples, it's only going to converge between minus one and one, even pointwise. Okay, so it's the polynomials are going to oscillate wildly, which is what we saw in our approximations earlier. Okay, and uniformly, it's going to be the same sort of issue where you have to move a little bit away from the endpoints to get it to happen uniformly. And once you've got that, then it also works for the grid. So this is the picture that will happen. And but these are cases we will study much more later. When we study power series. Okay, so anyway, so those are some examples, and they're good ones to keep in mind. So any questions about these examples before moving on to Cauchy sequences?
Yeah, I was just going to ask if you could talk a little bit more about the selection of K for 7, or if we'll go over that more later.
We will go for that more later, but this is, but I should certainly say what I mean. So this is just like the epsilon, this is for any K. So what it means is that if I fix K to be 100, then it converges uniformly. If I fix K to be 1,000, then it converges uniformly. It's just that I have to take a bigger N each time. And that's the same concept as up here where I was using the term epsilon. Right, but for the epsilon, the smaller you take it, the more bigger N you have to take, and for K, the bigger you take it. Okay, other questions about this table? Again, it's a good list of examples to have in the back of your mind.
On the little remainder for number 7, is E raised to, is that like a psi?
I'm sorry, that's a, I messed that up in that. It's some number. It is supposed to be a zeta. It's some number that's between x and 0, because 0 is our c. But that was
perfect.
From our formula. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, any other questions about this table?
Will we be expected to like prove these examples?
Yes, so at various times we will start to prove things about these examples. Any one of them should be something you should be able, in fact, to prove. Every one of them should be possible. I mean, it would be quite a bit of work to go through and prove each of these, but each one of them should be something that is something you could prove. Yeah. So if there are somewhere you don't see how you might approach it, then it would be good to ask.
No, I think I definitely have to sketch a bit. Thank you.
Okay, great. Okay, so that's our list. Okay, so then the next thing is Cauchy sequences. So let me start with the definitions. And as I said, I'm going to do three definitions, and one of them, just like I did for the limits, and one of them comes from the reals, one of them is just for the uniform case, and one of them is for the general norm case. And they are all very similar, which is why I'm putting them all together here. Definition. So first of all, there's the case for the reals. So 3.45 sequence AN in R is absolute value Cauchy and it's the idea is we're trying to talk about a sequence that's convergent without having convergence. Okay, so we don't have a thing it's converging to, and so what we're going to do is we're going to say it kind of converges to itself. So for all epsilon greater than 0, there exists an n, some integer, so itself. So I'm going to take any pair of numbers, n and m, that are bigger than n. And what I want is that the difference between a sub n and a sub m in my norm here, which is the absolute value, is bounded by epsilon. So here I didn't actually have a thing that it converges to, but somehow the points are getting close, right? So whatever this sequence of real numbers is, they have to be sort of converging on something in some sense. And that's actually going to be our theorem, that in fact are converging in our usual sense when you have this property. But the idea is I can say it without saying what it converges to. And that's the advantage of this notion. Okay, and as I said, I can now give the same notion in these other settings. So this is definition 9.12, a sequence of functions, f sub n of x. In functions on, say, an interval AB is okay. And now we're going to use uniformly Cauchy. We're going to try to write the same sort of thing. So for all these epsilons greater than zero, there exists n in z, and for all n and m greater than n, we have, okay, but now we're on functions and we want to have it be uniform. And so what we have is that for all x in the domain, so AB, then we have the difference between f sub n of x and f sub m of x is less than epsilon, okay? So that's the notion of Cauchy. And the same concept also makes sense for any norm, so I might as well give that definition, because it's really no different from the definition that we already have. This is definition 13.49, and it says that the sequence of functions is norm Cauchy and again it could be any norm just like previously and it's the same sort of thing again for all epsilon greater than zero there exists an n in z and for every pair n and m which are bigger than n then we have the only thing we could have in this setting which is that the norm of f sub n minus f sub m is less than epsilon. Okay, so it's exactly what you might have guessed from the previous two definitions, all right? Okay, so let's see, maybe I'll just mention a few theorems and then prove a few of them. So the first theorem is, one that we already did, and so I'm not going to prove it again from last term, but we're actually going to use it to prove the next one. So this is the theorem 3.46, which says that a sequence of real numbers is absolute value Cauchy if and only if it's convergent. So a sequence an in R is Cauchy if and only if it is convergent. Okay. And the point is that we're going to get the same theorem here. So theorem 9.13, a sequence of functions is also Cauchy if and only if it's uniformly convergent. And so a sequence fn in the functions, so just like in the definition 9.12, is uniformly Cauchy just like that definition, if and only if it is. And so now we want it to be convergent in the sense that agrees with this, so uniformly convergent. Okay, now it turns out this is not always true, and we will come up with some examples where this is true and where it's not true. So down here, let me just say that definition. If we have some space of functions where this is true, then we give it a name. Okay, so if Fn is a space, a sequence of functions in a function space. With a norm, we then call the let me give it a name, norm. There we go, sorry, double bars. Then call the space norm complete. If every Cauchy sequence is convergent. Oops. I'm sorry, my sentence is poorly formed here. Okay, let me edit it, I apologize. So I want if every, okay, sequence of functions in a function space with norm converges if and only if it's Cauchy, then call it complete. Sorry, I wrote my sentence, but I hope that's clear. So this is the notion that every sequence is convergent if and only if it's Cauchy. And so this is a given a name, it's not always true. And next time I'll run through, maybe even now I can run through some examples where this is true or not true. Okay, so that's kind of where we're headed. Let me just do a couple theorems that head us in that direction. So let me just back up a little bit and prove a few of the things that we've claimed. So one is this lemma. Which says that a sequence converges uniformly if and only it converges in the soup norm. So lemma, if we have a sequence of functions then just as we worked out as we asserted last time, so then it converges uniformly to capital F of X if and only if it converges to capital F of X in soup norm. Okay, so let me just prove that. This was something that we talked about, we asserted last time, but didn't prove. So proof. Okay, so this way. Fn converges. If Fn converges to F in uniformly, then okay. So what does that mean? It says that for all epsilon greater than zero, we have some n, so that whenever I have a little n bigger than capital N, we have for all x in AB, now we have that the difference between Fn of x and capital F of x is bounded by epsilon, right? That's just the definition, that's what it means. This is also, might as well go both directions because that's an if and only if statement. Okay, so let me write it that way. So this is then if and only if, so again, we have just copying for all epsilon greater than zero, there exists n in z. So for all n greater than n, we have. Okay, so what does this say? It says that the soup over all x in A and B is less than of the difference here between F sub n of x and capital F of x is less than epsilon, right? That's what it means, because each one of them is less than epsilon. So that's the same as saying that the soup is less than epsilon. And it's, of course, is the same as saying that, just copying again, the for all epsilon, there exists n for all little n bigger than n. And now this is just written in the form of the soup norm. Because that was the definition of the soup norm, okay? So if and only if Fn converges to F in soup norm. Okay, so that's just a proof of what we talked about last time. Any questions about that? Okay, and note that this also holds for Cauchiness. I won't prove it, but the proof is similar. So note, similarly, sequence Fn of x in the functions on AB is soup Cauchy, is a soup norm Cauchy. If and only if it is uniformly Cauchy. Okay. So those two are equivalent. All right. Okay, so I guess, I would like to prove this fact about sequences, but maybe I'll take a quick breakout room break and let you guys try some examples. And let me note the following thing. So first of all, so the breakout room, I want you to find some sequences of functions that are Cauchy. And in the setting, let me say that the main one that we want is uniformly Cauchy. Okay, so uniformly Cauchy. Okay. All right, so that's one thing. And then the other thing I want to do is find examples two. Find a sequence which converges pointwise but is not Cauchy. Okay, so let me just give you a few minutes to try just finding some examples like that. And then when we get back, I think we'll still have time to run through a proof of 9.13. Okay, and then next time we'll do more examples. Okay, let me just give you maybe 3 minutes. Okay, and actually, I'm sorry, Shannon, I said someone into their room by themselves. If that happens, please feel free to come back if you prefer, and I can move you to a different room. Anyways, So did anyone come up with some examples?
We went back to the table that we were looking at earlier.
Very good idea. Let's see where my table go. Here we go. Yep.
And we think that 1 over n sine root nx would be something that is uniformly Cauchy.
Yes, that's right.
And then for number 2, we were looking at 1 over x plus 1 over n.
Okay, and that one you thought would be not uniformly Cauchy.
Yeah.
Okay, and let's see, so and to figure this out, I guess what one would have to do is look at, let's see where the definition go, look at the difference between one of your functions at n and one of your functions at m, right, and see if that's getting small. And in your examples, that seems correct to me. So you have this, let's see, which one was it? This one here. Yeah, so the difference between any two of those functions, if n and m are both big, is going to be small. Whereas if you take the difference of these things, it's going to be mostly small, but not small around zero. So that's going to be the problem. Okay, did anyone find any other examples? So those are good. Okay, now let me just write down a proof of 9.13 and we're done. So, and the next time I'll write down a bunch of examples where we have this completeness or incompleteness and get more intuition for that. So a proof of theorem 9.13, this one right here. So we have that a sequence is uniformly Cauchy if and only if it's uniformly convergent. That's correct. That's what I want to prove. Okay, so let me do that. So it's an if and only if, right? So I have to go both directions. So if one direction. All right, so let me assume that my sequence is convergent. Converges uniformly to some function capital F. Then what do we know? So we know that for all epsilon greater than zero, there exists n sub epsilon, so that for all little n bigger than capital N, we have that the difference between for all x and x, we have the difference between little f sub n of x and capital F of x is less than epsilon, right? And let's see, so I can modify this. I also have an epsilon over 2, so this is actually less than epsilon over 2. So let me use that, right? Because I can just use the next epsilon. Okay, and so then hence, for all epsilon greater than zero, there exists, okay, and I can take this m now to be and I can just take it to be this n epsilon over 2. And so that for all n and m bigger than m, I have the absolute value of f sub n of x, and x. Just like above, so just copying what I have above, I have that the difference now between little f sub n and little f sub m of x. Okay, now how am I going to bound that? Can anyone see this? I need to have a trick now. I need to somehow get this f, capital F involved. How do I get capital F involved? Because that's what I know about. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to Subtract capital F and add capital F. So I'm not going to do anything, but I'm going to just throw in those capital Fs. Okay, so this is then equal to absolute value of little f sub n minus capital F plus capital F minus little f sub m. Right, I didn't do anything. I just added and subtracted the same thing. But now I'm done. So this is then less than or equal to f sub n, little f sub n of x minus capital F of x, absolute value plus the absolute value of capital F of x minus a little f sub m of x, which is less than or equal to epsilon over 2 plus epsilon over 2. And we're done. Okay, so that's one direction. Yeah, exactly. Someone got it in the chat. Add and subtract. Okay, and the other direction, if f sub n of x is Cauchy, then what we have is for all epsilon greater than zero, there exists this m sub epsilon. For all n and m bigger than m sub epsilon, I have that the absolute value of little f sub n of x minus little f sub m of x is less than epsilon. Once again, I can play around with the epsilon as much as I like. So there's also an epsilon over 2, which gives me epsilon over 2. So I can make, I can do that. Okay, and then the other thing that I know is I can make use of this theorem 3.46. So for all x, we have the sequence f sub n of x is just absolute value Cauchy in R. Okay, so by theorem 3.46, it converges. Okay, and it converges to something, to say L. And so define capital F of X is equal to L. So this gives me a function that I'm gonna try to compare. All right, so now I just have to check that this sequence little f sub n of X converges uniformly to capital F of X, right? So for each F of X, I found a, for each X, I found a value for capital F of X. So I defined the function, and I'm running out of time, but so I have to compute this and I see that I'm out of time. So I will do this next time, but you can try it yourself to try to get the same sort of thing as above. So finish next time. But you can just try it yourself and I'm gonna pick up right in the middle of a proof. So you might want to check where you were at the beginning of the Friday lecture. Okay, anyway, I will now turn off the recording, but stick around.